Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Canelario, and today I am talking with everybody's favorite auntie, mama, friend, sister, and the fight, Ms. Kay Harvey. Thank you so much for your time.
It is my pleasure being here with you, Jose Candelaria, on WYBC 94.3.
Stop it. You're already on the show. You don't even need You can't take my job. You can't take my job. I do the call letters. I do all that. That's my job. Now, let's get into it. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Hill. I was actually born on Orchard Street, Orchard and Golf, 647, as a matter of fact. And it's still there, part of Florence Virtue. And when I ride by there, I remember the tenement buildings that were there. Across the street where Bethel AME Church, there were stores, and it was a community where families, believe it or not, shared apartments. Our family had the front half. The Littles and the Johnsons that were there in our building had the back half upstairs, and we shared the kitchen. And that's how we lived communally, families. And so I was actually born there on Orchard. And in the early 60s, we moved to the Hill. And at that time, the Hill was mixed. It had the Jewish synagogue, which is now Thomas Chapel. We had Hummel's hot dogs. We had D'Amato's. We had a community. So you had a Polish, Italian, Jewish, and then African American, and then eventually Latino families started to move in, and I'm talking the early 60s. Mm. So from the Hill, I was very fortunate to be active. My dad was active. He actually came to New Haven from Harlem.
And I'm going to ask you, what's the gentleman's name before we continue?
My dad is Cato Hill, and my name is Kay Hill. And he came from Harlem with a friend because, you know, Connecticut, New Haven, known for the oysters and the seamen working on the boats. And so my dad's friend said, you know, hey, you want to come with me to New Haven and work on the boats? My dad was like, I'm not a seaman, you know, but I need some money. So let me take this chance. Came to New Haven, worked on the boat, got off the boat, went to the New Haven Green. And this beautiful woman was sitting on the bench on the New Haven Green. My dad asked, could he sit there? My mom said, it's a free bench, and the rest is history. From their actual meeting right there on the New Haven Green. And so I had the privilege. My dad was active with Fred Harris, and it was the Hill Parents Association. And they were located right there on Congress Avenue and White Street, because we lived on White Street. Our house is no longer there, but so with the movement that was happening here locally in New Haven, with all of the Black Power, and my dad was an activist along with Fred and some of the I can't remember the names of some of the guys that were very, very active. But I had the opportunity of sitting in and listening to how they were planning to march on the New Haven Green for better jobs, housing for the people. And so I think at the age of like 9, 10, I got a bug, you know, that I wanted to learn more about my people and what was happening as a kid. I really, you know, said, wow, what is this, you know, power stuff that's going on that my dad and these guys are talking about? Then I decided I really wanted to do dance. You know, I was like, And so I had the opportunity to attend Bowen Peters as a child. So from 11 years old through high school, danced with Angela Bowen Peters and all of the wonderful, talented people that came through that. And I'm looking forward to working now, and I'll talk about that later. But
because you're jumping ahead.
Yes.
You're jumping ahead for me.
I'll talk about that later.
We continue, I want to go back to your father. Mm-hmm. What is one trait or one ethic that you saw in him that really is part of your decision-making today?
Being determined. And my dad always talked about self-preservation is number one. And once you have it in your head, in your mind, and in your brain, no one can take it from you. And so he promoted, one of the first books he gave me was Before the Mayflower. And it took me like 5 years to read that book. But and then as I, you know,
that's some heavy reading for you. Yes. For your first book. That's not
easy
digestible.
No, I'm telling you, it took me that long, and then I had to read it again, you know, when I became almost a senior citizen, so I could reflect back on it. But I do remember. I think how important it is for young ladies to have a relationship with their dads. When he came from New York, he was a presser, a clothes presser. And he got a job in Meriden. And we actually would walk from White Street to the train station before Church Street South was built, which was tenements and swamp. And I remember walking through that to get to the train station, to get on the train, but I had to get my Luden's cough drops. And yeah, that was definitely something that I had to have. I looked forward to that. And we'd get on the train and we'd ride to Meriden. And I'd be there with my dad all day at the cleaners. And it was just wonderful time getting on the train, spending time with him, him telling me about his life in New York and my family in New York, because I am an only child of my mom and dad. Okay, but I have six other siblings. So, and my oldest brother from my mom was one of the original Five Satins. Yes. Well, I have pictures of my brother, Fred, and the group actually rehearsing in our house. That's 647 Orchard Street. Yes, yes. So anytime you see the commercial with the Five Satins singing in the Still of the Night, my brother is the tall one, the tall, handsome one. Yes, he is. Well, he was, but he is in my heart and mm-hmm. my mind. He'll always be. So my dad, advocate for education, that was something I always knew that I was going to go to college. I didn't know exactly what it was. I went through wanting to be a lawyer, wanting to be a scientist, and then wound up being an artist. So, you know, here we are. And then my career path changed. So,
well, with that said, it's time for a little break here. This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. We are speaking with none other than Kay Harvey. For those who know the voice and sounds familiar, now you know. Let's talk a little bit about Mom.
Yes. So
we're going to start because everyone just starts talking. What is her name?
My mom is Rodelia Hill, her maiden name, Royster, from a small little town called Virgilina, Virginia. Mm-hmm. Virgilina, it's on the border of Virginia and North Carolina. And actually, my grandfather, who her dad, he was ahead of his time. He was able to have sell insurance. Think about it. I'm talking going back to the early 1900s. So he sold insurance. He had an ice cream parlor. He was an entrepreneur. Had the candy shop, the ice cream parlor. And then he was able to purchase 56 acres, which we still have in the family. So my mom comes from a family of nine. She was number four in that ranking. She went to...
what was Granddad's name?
Ruffin. Ruffin. R-U-F-F-I-N.
Okay, before we continue, but go ahead now. Mama is number four of nine.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And her only surviving sibling right now is Aunt Pearl, who is 102. Yes. Her sister that I run back and forth to New York on the weekends and when I get a chance. And those who know me and have met Aunt Pearl... love her. She is a character. And she looks very, her and my mom look alike. So when I look at my auntie, I see my mom. I absolutely see my mom. And so my mom left Virginia, moved to D.C., moved to Philadelphia, then eventually wound up in New York. And how does she wind up in Connecticut? She met a guy. and you know, and he brought her to New Haven. And that's how my mom got here. And she actually did day's work for two prominent families, William Coffin, which I don't, he became the bishop or at Riverside Church in New York. Mm-hmm. And then the other family, It was the Coffins and the Wilders. Thornton Wilder, who is a famous author. And so I remember going to these big houses in like the St. Ronan's area, back up that way is where they lived. And going there with my mom and, you know, her doing her day's work. There and enough to afford to pay for me to go to Catholic school. So I went to St. John the Baptist on Dixwell Avenue. It's amazing how women are able to take what little bit of money that they earn and care for their families. You know, when I look back on the pennies, literally, that she brought home, dollars, but, you know, the cost of living was not like it is now. And believe it or not, the stores used to throw away neck bones. Anything that you can use to make a meal, the scraps, and literally that they are now selling as delicacies.
Oxtails, pig feet.
All of, you know,
see the price of pig feet.
Would throw that stuff away, uh-huh. And we would make meals out of it and feed the family. So she was able to scrape up her little pennies, pay my tuition, pay for me to go to dance school. It was just absolutely amazing. Between her and my dad, you know, if they brought home $50 a week, and you think about it, you know, you know, it's amazing. And then still be able to save. Still be able to put a dollar or two a week. Back in those days, we had the numbers, man. You know, now we have Connecticut Lottery. You know, big brother is now the Mr. Charlie that used to come and collect the money so that we would play the numbers. But that's real. I mean, that's life.
Is there a saying or just something she would say to you growing up that when you're making, or, you know, even to this day, when you're making a decision or when you're facing a tough time, that you can hear her say?
What would Mom say? That's a good question.
We can get back to it.
Yeah, we'll come back to that.
We'll come back to it.
I'm quite sure.
It's one thing because we grow up and we are not unaware of the struggle because our parents did such a good job of hiding it. Once you did see the sacrifice, how did that make you feel?
I felt special, actually. I did. I felt that, in a sense, they gave me a sense of worthiness because I had to do chores and earn. And I did. I earned my little 50 cents a week. And my mom taught me how to save, you know, went right down to Connecticut Savings Bank, which is right there on Church and Crown. The building is there, but mm-hmm. The bank is gone. And, you know, did Christmas clubs. We did the Christmas club. And at the end of the year, and I believe it was the end of the October, November, got our little money that was saved and was able to, you know, purchase. So my parents really made me feel special. They made me feel worthy, but they also taught me the importance of working and how important it is to give your best effort in what it is that you do. No matter what it is that you do, you give it 100%. It may not always work out, but you still put forth your best foot and make things, you know, as palatable, as comfortable for yourself and for others. I remember always wanting to help. I was, you know, always wanting to help.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario speaking here with Kay Harvey, and she's always helping. I need you to tell me where were you in your life when we first met in 1989 as you ran the summer camp at Church Street South, and I was your camp counselor employee at the ripe old age of 12 years old.
Yes, that was the year I actually got married to my second husband, Mr. Harvey. And, you know, how did I get there? We had wonderful, strong women in Church Street South. We had a tenants association that was to die for. Women that laid down in the street so that US 1 road got closed, because no other complex had a highway coming through it. And so those women laid down and was able to successfully get that road closed. And at the time, we had our state representative was Walter Brooks, and we wanted funding for the children. And so we did, and at that time, I had graduated from Howard and came back home and got involved with the women, the older women, you know, the Miss Purvis and Miss Davis and Miss Menifee, and you know, it was just a group of my, even my sister Miss Harriet, and so we protested at in front of Representative Brooks' home. And he came out and said, "Ladies, why are you doing this?" And we were like, "Because we need your attention and we need some money for the children." And you know what? He did it. He went to appropriations. We had to go up and testify. And we were able to get $100,000 for our first program called Youth Diversion. The Church Street South Youth Diversion, and the two programs, it was Church Street South and Farnham. And so at that time, none of the women that were involved in the Tenants Association wanted to do the programming. When I said none of, everybody was like, "Well, we did what we were supposed to do. We got the money. Now somebody needs to do it, right?" And so I was like, "Well, we can't let the money go back to the state." So I said, "Okay, I'll do whatever we need to do." There was not a floor plan. There wasn't a blueprint for the program at all. So Crystal Highsmith represented Farnham. She was the coordinator at Farnham, and I was the coordinator at Church Street South. And the crazy part about this is that we couldn't get anybody to take the money from the state. Now think about it. Church Street South was a housing complex. The state was not giving it to a for-profit entity. So we couldn't find anybody to take the doggone money. So we wound up, Mr. Moore, God bless him, introduced me to Dr. Moses, who had the Fairhaven Parents Ministry. And she took us in, and she became our fiduciary agent. And that's how we got those dollars from the state to New Haven to start the first youth diversion program in the state. So it was Churchy South, and then it was Ann Farnham Courts. And so now I got to recruit some staff and put this program together. And so that's how you came along, along with Rufus Sorrells.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, then Journal came a little after. I mean, it was a great group of young people that really wanted to do something. They want you all were eager beavers, wanting to participate, share, you know, the reap the benefits and share the proceeds, really.
Mm-hmm.
that were coming out of the program. And one of the things that we did is that we listened to you all. It's like, what are the things that you all want to do? And, you know, it was like, well, we want to skate. We want to, you know, we want to go camping. We want to, you know, just do after school programming where, we, you know, we could help the kids with their homework. And so we were like, okay, all right, let's make this happen. And
I
so
mean, it was, you don't know how it affected anyone, because for me, it was the first money in my pocket. I was able to, for the first time in my life, and it probably kept me off the streets my whole entire life, to have an opportunity to go to work, make my own money, buy my own clothes, mm-hmm. and enter freshman year in high school as probably one of the best dressed kids. But I am so grateful for that opportunity, because it probably was a monumental point in my life physically, because it taught me how to save money.
Mm-hmm.
I saved all my checks, even though it was I remember it was a paltry little 97 or maybe 100, if I was lucky, a week, working full time, 40 hours at a camp. But it was so impactful how that money is spent. And that's what people don't get, because now it's all metrics, right? Now it's mm-hmm. all could you have survived now with the metrics that exist?
Probably, because with the skills that my mom and dad gave me, yes. Watching them pinch pennies, I'm going to say yes.
But you influenced so many children over your lifespan, because between Churchy South, the barbell, you were involved with, I'm assuming?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
1996, I left Church Street South to go, because Mr. Moore was retiring, because he had already done his 40 years or 30 years at the barbell. And so he recruited me from Church Street South, and I started in 1996 at the barbell and was there for 8 years. As the executive director.
So you touch all these people's lives. I'm going to ask you a question of what meant more to you or the most to you? Was it the child that you saw become a doctor, or the child that you saw reform themselves once they know they disappointed you?
Wow, both. You know, because I have now the privilege of seeing those children, young people, now as adults like yourself, come up to me and say exactly what you just said. Do you understand the impact on that you've had on my life. And for me, I was too busy doing the work, knowing that I just needed to do the work. It wasn't about accolades. It wasn't about, getting awards or anything. It was like, these young people need love. They need security, safety, and they need fun. They needed fun. They needed to be children. And so when I see a young person who, may have gone to jail, because at that time, too, we were dealing with the Jungle Boys.
Jungle Brothers.
Oh, Jungle Brothers. Okay.
They were for you. They were just the Jungle Boys,
the boys, right? Right.
Because you knew all their mamas.
Oh my goodness! And they would come up to the community room. We're sorry, Miss K, because several times we would have to like hit the floor because of the shootouts. Mm-hmm. But we survived that. And so those young people who, went to jail, came out, and are now giving back to the community, it's just wonderful to see them and to hear how, being there, they knew that it wasn't the right thing to do, but it was the only thing that they could do to survive mm-hmm. at that time. So to see these young men and women, have transformed and themselves is just, I'm just grateful to be able to see that and to know I had a little, role in helping them become.
Don't you ever understate your role in our lives. This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario here telling Kay Harvey a thing or two about herself.
That's rare. No. You could tell me. I'm open.
That's fine, but please do not understate the impact that you've had on, because that little bit of attention, maybe that 1 minute or 3 minutes that you've actually gave to somebody, I know made a difference. And you know it makes a difference. Mm. And it makes a difference when you see it in our youth even today. Because what do they need more than anything else? They don't need money. They don't need reassurance. They just want some attention.
Time and attention. Time is something that you can't get back. And so when we respect it and know the importance of time, and that's one thing that I valued and I tried to instill in the young people that were working with us mm-hmm. is how important their time is and that they needed to be on time to work mm-hmm. and they had to have a schedule and discipline. And so those were the things that I know helped propel a lot of the young people into the careers that they have now, knowing how they needed to respect time.
Amongst all those things, we're almost out of time already, Ms. Harvey. So wow. Please tell me, what are you up to these days?
I have reinvented myself.
Okay.
I have gone from working nonprofit to being a for-profit woman.
All right. It's about time you put yourself first, sister.
Yes, it took 70 years. But it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, now you say you signed a contract with a real estate agency?
I am now. 2 years ago, I took the test 3 times and passed it on the 3rd time. It's a beast. HGTV and all of that. Don't believe the hype. It is work, But I'm not, I've never been afraid of work. One thing I can say, I've never been afraid to put in the hours, put in the time, study. And so I am now a realtor with licensed here in Connecticut, looking to get my license in Florida and Georgia and North Carolina as well with William Ravis. And I'm very, very pleased.
How can they get in touch with you?
Oh, now, because I just became a realtor, yeah. Here's my social. It's K Harvey. It's K-A-Y-E-H-A-R-V-E-Y dot Ravis, R-A-V-E-I-S.com. That's my email.
Okay.
And then my website is k.harvey@ravis.com. K-A-Y-E.
Congratulations on all your success. And I mean, look, we can continue talking about how you feel about the barbell being redone and what that means to you to see us reinvesting in our community.
Yes.
That conversation is for yet another day. And I want to go back to your HBCU days and how Howard was, because I just took a walking tour there and they have changed that up and down, left and right.
They have.
And I'm sure you were there in the Deb Allen days and look.
Well, actually, the Blackbirds were there doing it in the park, doing it after dark with Donald Byrd. He was the head of the music department.
Look at that. See, a whole nother conversation we can have. This has been the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. And of course, this was Miss Kay Harvey. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure. God bless you, and you continue to flourish.
Please, you're already on the show, young lady. You don't have to butter me up. With that said, to everybody that's out there listening, thank you so much for your time.